Hey guys, once again, welcome to the Disaster Cast. Is that the name for this? Is that what I decided on the name? I haven't done this in a while. So, anyway, today I'm going to be talking as I write, pretty much. But since I've taken a break from Greg Versus for a little bit as I work on other stories, I'm going to be going back to it in a short while. I'm just trying to, you know, pump out several chapters of each at a time so you guys have plenty to read. But back to my point about Greg Versus. So when I write Greg Versus, the central structure experiment isn't plot. I have a plot. The plot is very much written out, but the point of it isn't plot. It's cognition. Everything I write is based on cognition, especially in Greg Versus. The story treats the psychology of each characters as architecture. What you're reading isn't a personality, it's function of thought. Systems trying to work based on how I code each character. Greg, the nucleus of the story, of course, is a case study in ego as obstruction. He's not a reliable narrator. The world filters through his self-perception all the way since the very first arc, the very first chapter, really. And his self-perception is a funhouse mirror. He is lying to others as much as he lies to himself, as much as he lies to you, the reader. Now, the interesting thing, not necessarily about Greg, but the interesting thing about other characters like Theo and Sparky, for one, they were not conceived as characters in opposition to him. They weren't even planned, necessarily. Theo and Sparky emerged naturally as counterweights. Basically organically generated antibodies to Greg's mental architecture. Theo and Sparky aren't necessarily reliable narrators, but they are more true than Greg. They exist because the psyche of the story demands them. Now, Greg is the locus of the series. He's the narrative disease. He's what happens when consciousness becomes so self-referential that it becomes distorted. He's not an unreliable narrator because he lies. He's unreliable because he can't stop narrating himself. He exists as his own character to himself. He is playing himself. And actually, in more ways than one, but I'll get back to that later. Every thought he has is retroactively framed through identity. He's the philosopher brain in a vat, but the vat is made of his own ego. Thematically, Greg's whole deal is about the imprisonment of thought within self-awareness. He wants control over his life, sure, his world, his image, but his cognition always loops back inward because he's reinterpreting his experience as his own commentary. He cannot stop playing a part. He cannot stop joking. He cannot stop playing his own identity, even when others notice that he's playing, even when Amy calls him out on it or just looks at him weird, even when his mom knows he's doing too much. Even when his friends are like, bro, what's wrong with you? He can't stop. Taylor, Gallant, basically any character who is analytical enough can pick up on the fact that Greg is not right. Almost insane, really. And I love it. I love writing it. It's beautiful. He can't just be. He's too meta. He's too recursive. He's too layered. He has to understand that he's being. It's performative solipsism, in a way. Every act of introspection becomes a performance of insight. You have no idea how much I love talking about this. I didn't realize how deep it went until I actually started. So what makes Greg dangerous isn't his power. It's the fact that he can self-justify anything he does. Literally, if you let him talk long enough, he will convince anyone of anything. And that's the narrative of this. He can rewrite meaning to himself and to others faster than anyone can challenge him. It's also how I've been writing him getting smarter, pretty much. It makes him smart, but it also isolates him further. The walls he built are made of toxicity. Whoo, boy, this is funny stuff. But yeah, that's why he's unstable. If Greg is the one telling the story, does that make it true? Or is he just the loudest voice in the room, pretty much? Now, the thing is, we have to go to Sparky now. Sparky is the nervous system of the story when he's introduced. Sparky was created to be Greg's rationale. He was supposed to be the anchor that held Greg back. However, that anchor ended up getting tossed overboard. Well, that's kind of the purpose of an anchor, isn't it? That analogy doesn't work at all. I'm not re-recording that. This is a stream of thought. Anyway, Sparky is emotion and rationality and what it is to be normal. And that's very hard to fake truthfully. He's not a counterpoint to Greg, but he is the embodiment of everything Greg would be, in a sense. And then after he was awakened, so to speak, he is the embodiment now of everything Greg suppresses. The instinct, the affect, the reaction. He feels instead of pretending. His mind is built on a closed circuit between body and stimulus. You've seen how I write him, how he's over, he can't deal with all the sensations and feelings that are full of him. His previous character was somewhat depressed, and his current character is overstimulated, with his depression gone. But yeah, thought is something that happens to Sparky, not something he controls. A physical buzz is part of his narration all the time. He basically reads like he's a nervous system under constant voltage. The sentences I write is restless, rhythmic, and collapsing into short bursts whenever he can't stand still, constantly tapping and twitching with kinetic language. Because stillness equals death, basically. Not like literally, but metaphorically. That's what makes him human in the way that Greg isn't, and also the way that Theo really isn't. So, in the thematic geometry of Greg versus Sparky represents emotional truth. He's not stupid. His intuition is very strong and often more accurate, but it's reactive and non-linear. Emotion is his first response. Meaning follows after. Now, let's go to Theo. Theo is interesting because Theo was my last option. Theo's original character in this story is pulled from a concept I had of a worm short story in which Theo somehow met truth from a Full Metal Alchemist and gave away his empathy and ability to feel for power to, you know, be able to stop his father. And I kind of repurposed that into this story. Theo lost what he felt made him weak, the same way Sparky lost what he felt made him weak, purifying him for power. Sparky lost his depression. Theo lost the chunk of his ability to feel and relate to others. But yeah, Theo also didn't begin as a counterbalance, unlike, you know, Sparky. Theo appeared in the text because I realized the narrative needed a mind that was uninfected by Greg's theatrical self-awareness. A consciousness that was just, could think and, you know, could tell the truth and also lie without orbiting around identity. Where Greg's cognition spirals, Theo stratifies. Ugh. I really should re-record some of this, but I'm not going to. Where Greg rationalizes to protect his ego, Theo rationalizes to protect order, preserve order, not protect it. You can see this in his conversations with Sparky, and he will, you know, he pretty much submits to Greg because he's aware of the hierarchy and he's aware of his place in it. And he knows that pushing Greg on something doesn't get him what he wants. The best way is to just work around him. Sparky hasn't learned that. Well, Sparky knows that, but he's too emotional to do it. So when I write Theo, as you've seen in the most recent Theo interludes, Theo isn't necessarily denial. He just believes in systematizing. The prose is more of a mental machine than most characters I write. It's logic, syntax, and strict cognition without the gravitational pull of ego. I was inspired by Siler from Heroes. Have you seen Heroes? It's an old show. But yeah, when I write Theo, I'm thinking of what if Siler were young and also, you know, not a serial killer. Theo's emotional repression isn't denial. He just doesn't know how to feel anymore. Every clause is filtered, everything is deliberate and designed to preempt emotional chaos. And so, yeah, the essence of Theo's tragedy is that he can name every mechanism of feeling, but can't really feel safely himself. His love for Greg his respect for Greg, his love for his sister, and his envy of Sparky, all of it is articulated through abstraction. And, he needs metaphors the way other people need touch. Greg's selfhood drowns Greg. Theo's intellect starves him. Yeah, that sounds about right. sorry for all my laughing. I woke up at like 4, and I've just been writing since. I'm kind of hungry, honestly. But that's unrelated to what I'm saying. But yeah, the dialectic here, the synthesis of all of this. Thesis, antithesis. The missing synthesis here is Greg is a self distorted by cognition or narration. Theo is cognition purified of self. Sparky is emotion purified of pretense. Put together, they form a full functioning psyche. Separately, they're all terrible. Just horrible. And I love it. The irony is that neither of them... Greg could function alone, it'd be a mess. But neither of the two could really function alone. Theo, without feeling, calcifies into analysis paralysis. Sparky, without reflection, burns out. They both need what Greg represents, the capacity to integrate thought and feeling into identity. But Greg needs them to de-weaponize that integration he already has. So yeah, it's a trinity of epistemologies. Greg is, what does this make me? Theo is, what is true? Sparky is, what hurts? Mind, body, ego, but I kind of kept pushing it until it reached this point. Anywho, I'm working on a few more chapters, and I should be done, but I just wanted to record this so you guys could understand what's stuck in my head right now. Wow. How do I end this? I know what button to press, but I don't want to just say, bye, have a beautiful time. Keep reading, I guess.